Hey, what's going on, Planeteers? This is Kevin here with the Big Planet Podcast number 14. How's it out there in Big Planet Comics land?
Doing good, doing good. Thanks for bringing us back.
Aces.
Yeah, that's the shark over there, and that's my buddy, Nick High Times Liapis. anyway, this is the 14th Big Planet Comics podcast.
Whoa, whoa.
Yeah, we've made a lot of these now.
Lucky number 14.
My name's Kevin.
I think I'm Nick.
Yeah, the Nick High Times Liapis.
I will play Jared for this evening.
And that's the shark.
The shark.
Yeah, so like last week, there are lots and lots of books out. So
yep. Hang on to your hats.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of reviews this time. I guess I wanted to talk real quick about SPX. It was this past weekend. We all attended.
It was the amazingest of most amazingest.
It was good stuff.
I got wasted.
Yeah, that's definitely what happens at SPX.
There is a social element to it, yes.
My friend was there and he was like, I got really drunk and hung out with Craig Thompson and like, I wish I hadn't drank so much. I'm like, that's the opposite story of what everybody else tells.
Yeah,
everybody else is like, I got drunk and hung out with Craig Thompson and it was amazing.
Yeah,
I wish I got drunk with Craig Thompson.
Yeah, but it was a good show. I mean,
it was fantastic.
I helped run it and so I was pretty happy. The attendance was up this year and we had lots of cool stuff. We got like if you guys missed it, some of the panels are going up on the webpage right now.
Yep. So you can like them on Facebook and they will post them up there.
And we have a lot of the comics at our store.
Yeah, we do. And at our Vienna store, we ordered a bunch of the SPX comics and we got them on the shelf.
And we'll get some more soon.
Will we?
Yeah.
How are we going to do that?
Direct from the creators.
Holy macaroni.
Holy macaroni.
You heard it here first, folks. Yeah. So, should we just get into reviews? We got a lot of them this week. Oh, let me say my stuff.
Oh, here we go.
You can like us on Facebook.
Aww.
You can just like us.
I like us.
But we prefer if you do it on Facebook so we have proof.
Yeah. A little distance, too. Better than like.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
What the cool kids do.
Yep, they have iTunes phones. And just, you know, go to Big Planet Comics. Yeah, what? Go to BigPlanetComics.com for more information.
Big Planet Comics Jr.
Yeah, let's just get into this. Oh no, my thing's not working.
That's what she said.
We love comics, they're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
I had a little technical difficulty there. My little keyboard that I used to play that little song wasn't playing, and so none of the little things happened.
Poor little keyboard.
Poor little listeners.
Yes, we'll fix it.
But welcome back to the Big Planet Comics podcast, you guys. All right, so let's get right in this. We have I'm looking at this list. I think we have about 10,000 books to review this week.
We may skip two.
So, yeah.
Just skip to 1,040.
I hope you guys are on a cross-country road trip right now or else you're going to have to stop this in the middle. All right, so let's get right into it. First thing we got 27, second set, number one. This is by Charles Soule and Renzo Podesta.
Is that the same artist as the end of the first series?
No, he did the whole first series.
Was it?
Yeah, it was the same guy the whole way through.
It was the same crummy art the whole way through.
It seemed like it decayed a bit.
But so the first 27, if you guys didn't get a chance to read it, it was like it was kind of a thing about how musicians always die at age 27. And this one particular musician who makes a deal with the devil and has this crazy thing implanted in his chest where he can have like 3 hours of brilliance every time he presses it. But if he uses it 27 times, he dies. It's a really convoluted story, but the guy Charles Soule that wrote it, he wrote Strongman, which was really awesome, and the writing in 27 is really awesome.
It is.
It's a really fun story.
Yeah. It may be coasting on the writing a little bit.
Yeah, it was fun enough for me to read the second one, even though the art is really, really awful.
Yeah, I have to say I'm not a big fan of the art. Charles, sorry if you're listening to this, but I was not a big
it's
fan
functional.
Of
it. But it's functional. You can follow the story at least.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, yeah, I mean, it's not that bad, but... Yeah, I mean, definitely read the first one if you're going to read this. It definitely picks up right after this is about the main character trying to kind of make a comeback. He was a very popular musician at the beginning of the first series, and he kind of fell from grace a little bit.
A little bit.
And this is about him coming back.
It's good.
I heard Amy Winehouse is going to be in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Timing. Oh,
timing.
Topical. So, yeah, that's pretty much that. Yeah, if the idea is interesting, I'd say definitely check out the first trade paperback. Yes. It's a cool story.
Why not?
All right, well, let's keep this thing moving.
Rolling right along.
We're going to move it right along, just moving like the Muppets.
Right. Yeah, there we go.
All right, so next up, we've got the Carl Barks Bear Book. Is that what this thing's called?
It's the Big Book of Barney Bear, I believe.
There you go. Yeah, just as Carl Barks Bear Book on my thing. But yeah.
it's a book of Carl Barks nude pictures.
Yeah, so this is a big, nice hardcover book that came out from IDW.
Yep.
And basically this is like 26 stories that Carl Barks did about Barney Bear and
Benny Burrow.
Benny Burrow.
Benny.
If you guys do, people know who Carl Barks is, right? Not everybody does though.
The comics literati know, but yeah. I think you should re-explain.
Well, Carl Barks is the greatest comics creator of all time.
Oh, nice. One of them.
He did Donald Duck stories for probably close to 30 years.
Oof, maybe longer than that. Yeah.
And yeah, he's amazing.
He's a big Disney guy. Like basically, if you've ever read any Donald Duck things, or especially if you saw DuckTales or Tailspin, like basically every character you saw in those shows, he made up.
Well, yeah, not Tailspin, but
not Tailspin?
No, Tailspin is like about the people from the Jungle Book flying planes.
Yeah, it's like Baloo.
Some of those too.
But most of the stories from DuckTales, like the big adventure stories that are in that series, are all based on old Carl Barks stories. And it actually Disney even put out two books that are like the greatest DuckTales stories ever told, which are Carl Barks things. But this stuff is stuff he did in the early in the mid 40s, like 44 to 47. That's pre Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge stories.
Huh. Okay.
And these were published in the R Gang comic book that was by Walt Kelly, who did Pogo, which I think is pretty cool. And yeah, it's good.
It's awesome. It's just the misadventures of a big dumb bear, kind of like Yogi, but more like, I don't know, goofy. And it's him and like his burrow pal, who's kind of a smart little scheming guy.
The smart sidekick who has to put up with the idiot and kind of get him out of trouble and stuff.
Yeah,
it's a good dynamic. And Carl Barks is a master technician.
Yes.
This stuff's a little rougher than his later stuff, I will say.
It's not as polished as his later Duck stuff, but it's still got that kind of brilliance where every few panels you'll see like some great, you know, dynamic, kinetic action shot that's hilarious, or yeah, just some great character development in the facial drawings and stuff.
And I would say like the PS Magazine book that came out last week with Will Eisner's book that he did for Preventative Maintenance Monthly, I think it was. This is like a very much a piece of comics history.
True.
So if you're interested in sort of the history of comics, this is a cool little thing that was missing that is now here.
Yeah.
All right.
Next.
Yeah. Next. I mean, it's great. So yeah, definitely check it out. Next up, we're moving into some of the DC 52 books.
Here we go.
We're starting with a good one, though.
Okay.
This is Batman and Robin number one.
Oh, this was a good one.
Yeah, this is by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. And they did a few issues of Batman and Robin.
Yeah, they were initially supposed to, like, it was like, they were the new creative team on Batman and Robin. They did three issues, and then they didn't do the next, like, six or whatever, which I'm assuming is because they were, like, shunted onto this.
Why bother? Save yourself.
Yeah.
I think it was more like they did such a good job that they were like, well, we'll save you guys for later, and then we'll put a bunch of filler artists in because we don't care about the old DC universe anymore.
Yeah.
But I thought this story was very cool. It's Bruce Wayne is Batman again, as was established in... I don't know.
So did they do
Detective Justice Comics League, last week in Justice League?
But I gotta say, in Batman and Robin at the end, I stopped reading it way after Morrison stopped doing it, so I missed a lot of them. Had they put Batman back with Bruce Wayne back with him?
No, this is the first time. And Damian kind of mentions, you know, he's like,
well, tell people who Damian is because some people.
Oh yeah, well, Robin in this is Damian, who's Batman and Talia al Ghul's son, and he mentions in this that he misses Dick, and that's only those. Well. Yeah, that's the only mention you get of stop giggling. That's the only mention you get of him of you know Dick being Batman like previously, and there's not much other mention of the stuff that came before.
Yeah, so a vague throwaway reference that you know Nightwing used to be Batman.
But I'm assuming that most of that stuff will get covered in Nightwing.
Yeah, I hope so. Not to go too far off the topic because we have a lot of stuff to cover. But I'm really curious to read Nightwing number one and see kind of how they're going to handle the fact that Dick Grayson was Batman for a long time because they're not getting rid of that stuff.
Yeah, no, this also incorporates some of the Batman Incorporated stuff because it's they have like a Russian Batman in the beginning and stuff like that. And somebody's actually going around the world trying to kill all the Batman. That's kind of the basic premise.
And like Barney Bear and Benny the Burrow, I think there's a really good dynamic between the two main characters.
No, I was kind of worried about it because like in the old Batman and Robin where it was like the very serious Nightwing trying to be the new Batman in this really punk upstart 10-year-old. He's 10 in this, right?
Yeah.
You know, as the new Robin, I thought that dynamic wouldn't work as well.
But it actually...
Bruce Wayne, it seems really natural and really good.
Yeah, I think it actually works really well because Bruce Wayne don't take no guff.
That's true.
He don't take no guff.
Yeah.
And he's still funny, though.
Yeah. Damian is a little crap. Does that work the same as saying what he really is?
No.
But he's a little...
Punk.
He's a little punk.
He's a little punk. He's good at like what he does, but he's just like really cocky and like...
Which is kind arrogant. Of like some of the Robins.
He's the best he is at what he does. And what he does is be a little punk. But Batman puts him in line. And it's interesting. There's some pretty interesting stuff in this. Like, they're very much establishing, I feel like, a new direction for Batman in that like in this, he decides he's not going to celebrate his parents or celebrate, but he's not going to sort of honor the anniversary of their death anymore and sort of honor their wedding anniversary. So I think things are going to get a little bit, I don't want to say lighter in the Batman universe, but a little less gritty and miserable all the time. But I thought this was very well written. The art's really cool from Patrick Gleason.
Yeah, really good art.
Yeah, his stuff is really expressive.
And I also feel that actually, well, I don't, this is kind of off topic, but all that stuff you were just saying about Bruce Wayne trying to get away from the dark stuff is, I think, kind of from what happened at the end of Flashpoint, where he got like the letter from his dad. And so I think he kind of feels like, well, my dad wouldn't really want me to be this kind of dark and weird. And so he's like, let's be a little more lighthearted about
that. That makes sense.
Stuff.
I didn't really think about that.
That's an interesting theory, except there's no connection between Flashpoint and this universe.
Well, no, that happens in the regular universe.
Yeah, that happens in the DC New Universe, because at the end, Flash is like, I'm back. And he's wearing the new costume, and so is Batman, and he gives him a letter from his dad.
I just want to point out that there's a single tear rolling down my face right now. Just
Yeah, we're going to tattoo it on in a minute.
Yeah, so that was Batman and Robin. It was a very good first issue. I thought it was
really good.
I thought I wasn't going to be too excited about this one, but after I read it, I was pretty happy.
Yeah, there's nothing groundbreaking, but it's a really solid, really well-told Batman.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read issue two.
Yeah, me too.
So moving on to Batwoman number one. This is written by J.H. Williams III with help from Hayden Blackman, and the art's by J.H. Williams III. And it says Amy Reeder on here. Did she actually draw some of this issue?
I have no idea.
Anyway, we'll
don't think so. But
it doesn't matter, because the art in this, astounding. If you did, yeah,
whoever drew this, it is amazing.
Yeah. So Batwoman was initially written by Greg Rucka with art by J.H. Williams, and it was part of Detective Comics about 2 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And there was a really interesting story in that about Batwoman's long lost sister and this Alice in Wonderland character. And this seems to just sort of continue with that story a good bit, with some new elements added in. And one thing that I will say about this book that you mentioned earlier, Nick, is that it seems to be very much just like a continuation of an old story and have nothing to do with the new 52 at all.
Yeah, no, not really. Yeah, it's all like kind of you jump in and it's in the middle of everything, like the stuff that happened to the detective had just happened and she's kind of dealing with the fallout from that still.
Well, what I believe is when we went to the DC meeting, they said, because they actually did a Batwoman issue zero like 8 months ago.
Yeah,
is that about right?
Something like that.
And then issue one never came out. So for all you people waiting, this is Batwoman number one. At the DC meeting, they said that he had started drawing number one and they realized they're going to do this huge giant relaunch with all these number ones. They said, wait, just keep drawing it and we'll just publish it in September. So apparently he's been drawing Batwoman issues for 8 months and might have a whole bunch of them already done, hopefully.
So like, two of them.
Yeah, so he's probably got like three or four done.
That's
yeah.
what I'm worried about. But for that, it sounds like he just kept with the original storyline they were doing and just drew.
And if you see J.H. Williams' art, I mean, you'll understand why it takes him so long. His layouts are wonderful. He does like insane things with pages that a lot of people don't do.
Yep.
Everything has... It's so intricate and it's painted. It's just, you know, talking about art's a little weird sometimes.
Yeah, gorgeous
it's
like, coloring.
Yeah, just look at this. I mean, the cover of the book pretty much tells you what you're in for. And yeah, it's a great looking book. It's an interesting story, although it might feel a little bit like you're jumping in the middle of something if you just read this.
Yeah, a little bit. But there's a trade out of the first story from like 2 years ago.
Yeah, so. I think they give you enough information where you can just
kind of... Yeah, there's kind of a two-page recap thing in the middle of the issue.
Yeah, you can just kind of go with
it. But it's cool. It was good.
Really good.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to... Oh, this book was so good. This book is called Benjamin Bear in Fuzzy Thinking. It's a hardcover put out... Oh, what's his name?
Toon Books. Yep.
Yeah, which is the children's book... thing that's run by Francis Mollet and Art Spiegelman, who both used to work on Raw Magazine, which was a seminal underground comics magazine in the 70s and early 80s.
And now they're doing kids books.
So this is the guy that wrote and drew this is Philippe Coudray, and I guess that's what it looks like it says there. and these books are cool. They're set up like if any of you guys have kids or if you are children listening to this, hey, how's it going, kids? They're set up like chapter books where they have like reading levels on the back, and they're really meant to sort of teach kids how to read. And this one seems to also be interested in teaching kids about logic.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's hilarious.
It's so funny.
Can you kind of describe, just like Nick, can you, Jared, you didn't get a chance to read this, did you?
No.
I'm throwing you under the bus right there.
I was cracking up, man.
Yeah. Can you describe like one of the little short things and make it funny?
No pressure.
I don't know if I can. Well, there's like one of the first
wait,
ones.
Act it out.
one of the first of them is him and his friend is like a squirrel, and they're like fishing. And he's like, I bet I can catch more fish than you. And he's like, I bet I can get more fish than you. And then the squirrel has like a giant pile of fish, and the bear just has like a big fish. And he's like, I got more than you. And then the bear like squeezes the fish, and all these like tons of fish come out of his mouth. And he's like, no, I win.
Yeah, it's all really weird stuff like that. It's almost like it reminds me a little bit of Perry Bible Fellowship in a way.
Wow, almost.
But it's not as twisted as that. Yeah, Perry Bible Fellowship is definitely not for kids, no matter what the covers look like.
Like another example is there's like a one with like a this fox is like, I bet you can't do this, and he breaks some blocks with his hand like kung fu style.
Which Nick is now acting out.
And yeah. And then the bear is like, I can do that. And he's like, oh, yeah, prove it. And then he just grabs the fox and breaks the bricks with the little fox.
Or there's one where he's like digging a hole for hibernation. And the rabbit's like, hey, why is that hole so big? And he's like, I need to keep all my food in there. And the next panel is just him. And he's like really fat. He fills up the hole.
Yeah.
These sound like really like Looney Tunes cartoon style.
Yeah.
They're more weird.
Yeah. They're more weird than that. But yeah, it's very funny. It's definitely... You know, if you have kids and you want to buy them comics that you're going to enjoy as well, definitely check this out. I'd say it's probably aimed for, I think it says level 2, which I think is like 5-6-year-olds.
Yeah, most are like 3-6-year-olds, I think.
Yeah, so that's Benjamin Barron, Fuzzy Thinking, an all-ages book.
There you go.
Yeah, definitely excellent. Very cool stuff. All right, so moving on to, there are a couple things this week that I just want to mention that they're kind of out. So this one is The Blue Estate trade paperback by Viktor Kovachev and Kosta Yanov, and it's got art by so many people. Toby Cypress, Nathan Fox, Robert Bailey, Paul Mayberry, who are all like amazing artists.
Yeah. Yes.
Who wants to give somebody a quick breakdown of what Blue Estate is about?
It's kind of one of those modern crime books like everyone started doing, where it's a failed action movie guy, kind of like a Steven Seagal character, and his wife who's getting involved in stuff, and lots of double crossing in a just kind of schlubby private eye. You know, it's the typical cast of modern noir characters.
Yeah, it's like actress, private eye, action hero, and mobsters getting involved in a crazy scheme.
Yeah, one of the main stories is about like an actress in rehab who sort of really gets involved in this world that is, you know, she gets totally in above her head.
Yep.
And different aspects of the story are drawn by different artists, and it's very good.
Yeah, whenever it shifts to a different character, that artist like draws that character's part, which is cool.
And like Toby Cypress is a really standout guy on this. He drew the second half of the Killing Girl miniseries, and he just did this thing called Rod Racer, which if you guys like crazy stuff, I mean, Rod Racer is sweet. I don't know. Did we talk? I think we talked about Rod Racer.
About it, yeah.
And Nathan Fox.
Nathan Fox is great. If you like Paul Pope, he just rips him off all the time, but it looks really good.
He's kind of developed his own style nowadays, but yeah, he definitely started off as a Paul Pope guy.
But Blue Estate's very cool. It's just another one of these Image books. Image has been doing a lot of good stuff recently, and this launched around the same time as another book called Green Wake, which is also awesome. And
the next book on the list, right?
And the next book on the list.
Carbon Gray, right?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Freefall number one. This is like basically, I just want to let people know Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 9 just started up. So if you're listening to this and you didn't know that, now you do, because I can't talk about anything that happens in this book because
season 8 is now out in trade. If you want to catch up, season 9 just started along with Angel and Faith.
And there was definitely a thing that happened at the end of season 8 that makes it so you can't talk about anything that happens.
But I can say that this first issue was really well written.
Yeah, like, Buffy becomes a werewolf, right?
I should say at the end of Buffy season 8, in the last issue, Joss Whedon wrote a little thing in the back saying, hey, we know you guys had a lot of problems with this. We
tried some crazy stuff.
They tried some crazy stuff. Basically, Buffy became this thing that was Joss Whedon, you know, seeing what he can do without a budget.
Right.
And it got a little too crazy, got a little too much away from the character stuff. And after reading the first issue of this, it seems like they're getting back to that character
this
stuff.
This entire first issue was awesome character
stuff. So if you're a Buffy fan and you felt like season 8 got away from you, check out season 9. It's cool. Although you might be surprised about one certain element about it. But anyway.
I still need to watch season 6 and 7 before I can read 8 and 9.
Oh, did you watch 1 through 5 finally?
I've seen them all like, but when they were on. But I stopped at some point and I had to rewatch all of it. So we'll see.
Nick's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer neophyte.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Only watch it one and a half.
I watched the first 5 seasons on the air.
Only 5 seasons.
But then it switched to the UPN or whatever, and I stopped watching it.
Fell off.
Yeah. He was mad because it replaced Girlfriends, which was his favorite show. All right. So moving on to another Image thing. I actually didn't read much of this series. It has great art. But this is Carbon Gray. This is volume 1, Sisters at War, by Hoang Nguyen, Kari Evans,
it's
Paul Gardner,
5 people.
Mike Kennedy. And art by Kari Evans, Kinson Lowe, and Hoang. Those are the same names again. Yeah. Okay. So
some of them are.
It's like a studio of guys working on this book.
Yeah.
Together.
So Carbon Gray is kind of like a steampunky,
steampunk World War One action with hot girls and weirdness.
Like a sort of assassination.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like a bunch of sisters, and one of them is destined to change the world, and there's people trying to kill them, and they're trying to kill people, and that's about it. That's
lots
all you need.
Lots of swords and guns and airplanes and airships and awesomeness.
This is very much like Sucker Punch if Sucker Punch wasn't a sucky punch.
Yes.
Ayo.
Ayo. But no, definitely, just if you come in the store, open this up, look at the art.
Yeah,
if you like amazing. The art on this, it's definitely going to be worth checking out. But it's like painted really nice. It reminds me a little bit of Joe Chen, who was a Buffy the Vampire Slayer cover artist. Speaking of Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
nice.
Bringing it back.
Yeah. So,
we're already past that. Move on.
Yeah, yeah. So let's move on. All right, next up, we got, God, there's so much stuff this week.
Well, keep going.
Talking about it's not going to get us
through it. Rolling. Keep this train rolling.
All right. So next up, we've got Deathstroke number one. This is by Kyle Iggins and Joe Bennett.
You mean Kyle Iggins?
Yeah.
This comic almost gave me a Deathstroke.
Oh, heyo.
Heyo. Nice.
So yeah. Well, Nick, since you loved it so much, why don't you tell people what Deathstroke was about?
Deathstroke is about Deathstroke the Terminator, and he's like an assassin.
Don't you meet Mr. Slade?
He's got an eye patch. He's badass. In fact, they tell you that he's badass. Some guy's like, man, that guy is damn badass.
Yeah, I feel like it was the writer telling you he was badass. Yeah, right? It's not actually a narrator.
I feel like the writer like thought he was hip, but he didn't really understand how like the hip stuff works. He's like, oh yeah, we're what do they call themselves? The dogs,
Alpha dogs,
the Alpha dogs.
I should say that's dog spelled DAWGS, just so you know,
or something like that. Anyway, yeah. But anyway, it's like he's sent to kill some guy, and he's made to work with a group of like young, like hipster kind of like assassins.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, basically, it's like a basic assassin story. As we were, there is a scene in this that takes place on an airplane, like so many of the new DC books. And yeah. I believe, is a baby killed in this book? There are babies killed in a lot of these DC books this week.
Maybe because part of an airplane is blown up. Yeah. And there's clones in it, so probably.
But it's kind of a straight-up story. And, you know, he's got his, like, basement full of nerds. Like, he's on CSI Miami or, you know, Criminal Intent or something like that. And then there's a thing that happens at the end of the story that kind of negates everything that happens in the story. So basically, Deathstroke 2 is going to be like Deathstroke 1 Part 2.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I was not a big fan of this book.
Actually, the art was great.
The art was good.
The art was great. It was basically like a really awesome action film with the worst dialogue ever.
Yeah. And the worst everything.
Yeah, some of the dialogue in this was incomprehensible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you have a... Well, we shouldn't go too deep into it.
Yeah, I know.
But there's some dialogue in here that's pretty rough. This was definitely... Was this my least favorite DC book of the week?
It was not.
No, it definitely
wasn't.
It wasn't,
because I know you're talking about another
one. Oh, okay. Nick has a copy here. Right.
I'm going to
read
passage.
You...
It's somewhere around there.
This is so jerky, but I'm going to read you guys something from Deathstroke. All right, so right on the first page, there's a thing that says, to everyone that's not Elsie Kopneck, do the smart thing and head to whatever whorehouse you spend your nights.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, that's definitely missing a word or two. But here's my favorite part.
This next sentence is probably the most confusing. I had to read it a couple times.
You'll need a 15-minute window over a large body of water. A jet sharpshooter over here can keep 1,000 meters in front of the target, and glasses to be able to jam transponder and radio signals. yeah, so that was Deathstroke.
There's a little bit
one.
Of context with that, but even with the context, it doesn't make any sense.
What they needed was a little more commas with that. But anyway,
yes, they did.
All right, so let's move on to my favorite DC Universe book of the week. Oh, is it? I don't know.
Does
anyway,
it start with a D?
Yeah, it does start with a D.
Might be.
This is Deathstroke number one.
Does it end with Eamon Knights?
It does end with Eamon Knights. So this is the Eamon Knights number one. This is by Jeff Lemire and Diogenes Neves.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird, hard to pronounce names
on
this.
There are.
But this is awesome. Basically, this is Etrigan. If you guys know Etrigan, he's the demon. He's been around for a long time. He usually rhymes, but thankfully in this book he doesn't, because...
It is the greatest character evolution in his history.
He does rhyme once.
He does rhyme once. He rhymes when he changes, because that's sort of a classic thing.
Because it's magic.
Yeah. But this is... if you guys read Stormwatch number one, you may have noticed the demon in the back. Oh, did I say who wrote this?
Paul Cornell.
Yeah, on here this says Jeff Lemire, but that's not right.
That's not right at all.
It's Paul Cornell.
Oh, God, you did say that.
Yeah, so the demon showed up for a second in Paul Cornell's Stormwatch, which I thought was pretty cool. But
interesting.
Yeah, basically this is a story that takes place in the Dark Ages about the demon, Madame Xanadu, Shining Knight, and Vandal Savage fighting a bad guy. Like Mordru, is that his name?
Mordru, and then some other. It's awesome.
They found every vaguely fantasy, historical, weird character and put them together on a team, and it's awesome.
Yeah, but it's just a very fun fantasy book. It's well done. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And it has good art and
good action.
This is going to be a book that not a lot of people are going to pick up. But if you just want some like fun book to read.
And there's a hilariously over the top ending.
The ending is great. And there are dragons in it.
Yeah.
So
plus.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's very cool. And I don't know. It's good.
Yeah.
That's all.
Just read it.
So, yeah, basically, if you're looking for something different from the DC line, that's really good. Try this.
And that's I will say that's one thing about this DC line. I feel like there are, there are hits, there are misses. But there are a lot of different kinds of books, which is definitely something DC didn't have before.
I was actually complaining about that I felt they weren't taking enough advantage of the chance to do new stuff, and I was wrong. They are doing some really cool
stuff. Yeah, this week is all like crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Well, and last week had Animal Man, which was pretty off the rails and awesome.
And Swamp Thing.
Yeah, but this is definitely, I'd put this in my top five of the DC books that have come out so far.
Yeah.
There was another really good book this week, or two other really good books this week as well, but... All right, so let's move on to Fear Itself, Hulk versus Dracula number 1 by Victor Gishler, who's been writing who's been writing some Dracula stuff in X-Men, and Ryan Stegman, who I am a huge fan of. He did the She-Hulk's miniseries that came out about a year ago that nobody really cared about, that was supposed to be an ongoing series and got canceled.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but so I didn't actually get a chance to read this. I'm sure Nick read it because he reads everything that has either Hulk or Dracula in it.
Yep.
He read this one twice.
So why don't you tell people what this is about?
Wait. Is someone fighting someone in it?
Yes. Someone's versusing someone.
Yes. Well, basically, it starts off with like a bunch of vampires getting killed, and then Dracula's like, "What's decimating our armies?" And they're like, "It's the Hulk." And so the Hulk's just kind of going around killing vampires. It's not really clear why
that's not the plot at all. Hulk is going through Transylvania and Dracula's trying to stop him.
No, yeah, but he's like possessed by like
one of those hammer dudes.
Like the hammer or whatever. And he's like going around the countryside just killing vampires. But he's only killing vampires for like most of this.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like weird because they're like, we sent different types of vampires against him and nobody has been able to defeat him. And then these other vampires show up. They're like, we can defeat him. And then Dracula's like, you're going into the dungeon, because they have some weird past that's not revealed. And then Dracula tries to send some monsters to fight Hulk. That's about it.
Let's simplify this. Was it good, Jared? Yes or no?
No.
Was it good, Nick?
Lord, no.
Okay, it was no good. Let's move on to Fear Itself, Monkey King number 1. This is written by Joshua Fiakoff, who wrote memoirs.
Echoes.
Tumor. He's writing... He's writing I, Vampire, yes. I think. And the art is by the amazing Wando, who drew that crazy Spanish Fantastic Four comic and scads of other things. He's been doing the covers for the Red Skull books, right?
Yeah. No.
Someone else.
Oh, anyway. So
example failure.
This book had amazing art, I will say.
Yes.
It's kind of tenuously related to Fear Itself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't even matter. It's so funny and so good.
Yeah, as a story on its own, it's pretty fun, though. I mean, somebody tell people what this thing's about.
Well, the Monkey King is like...
Please try.
Basically, in Iron Man 2.0, there was a story where two of the Hammers went to the Eighth City, which is Hell, and him and the Mortal Weapons went to get it back, and they met a newer Mortal Weapon, who is the Monkey King, and he... got freed at the end of it. That's about it. And then this is like him getting freed from hell, and that's...
Yeah, that's about it. With some humor injected.
Very
and
funny, weird kung fu action, crazy stories. Yeah, it was cool.
It actually, in a lot of ways, reminded me of Infinite Kung Fu, which is a book that we're going to talk about. Yeah, I should say, there's so many floppies coming out right now.
That's true.
So many floppies. that we're missing a lot of the bigger graphic novels that some of us have had a chance to read some of them and some other ones. But basically, once all this DC New 52 stuff finishes, we're going to cover a lot of these books like Infinite Kung Fu and Any Empire and the new Jacques Tardy book that came out this week and some other stuff.
Hopefully Habibi too.
And Habibi.
In October.
Yeah. If you guys feel like we're missing stuff, that's why.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll have the non-floppies later.
If anybody cares, nobody cares.
If you care, send us an email at podcast@bigboyscomics.com.
But yeah, so Fear Itself, Monkey King, it's a one-shot, and it was fun.
It was really fun.
Yeah, and it's got really good art.
And a Monkey King.
And it's got a Monkey King and a Lion King.
Lion King.
There is a Lion King in it.
And Mufasa is in it.
Yeah, Mufasa is in it.
Yeah.
And then Scar comes, and then he beats up the Monkey King. But Timon and Pumbaa are like, no worries.
It's the circle of life.
Yeah.
Nothing to fear but Hakuna Matata.
Yeah, and then Akuma shows up and he's like, Hakuna Matata. Anyway, that was my Street Fighter joke for today. So moving on to an awesome book. This is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, number one, by Jeff Lemire and Alberto Ponticelli.
Hey, there's Jeff Lemire.
Tell people what Shade stands for, Kevin?
Oh, do I know?
No,
Good. Because I looked, I was like, oh, I'm going to tell people what Shade stands for in this podcast.
No, it says something. Hold on, I'm going to look it up. You keep talking.
I got it right here.
Wait, no, don't look it up. Are you going to remember? Let's make up what Shade stands for. Jared.
All right. See, Superhuman Agents of Destroying Evil.
Nice. That's nice. Pretty good. Supernatural Heroes and Dudes Eating.
Frankenstein, does he even need to eat? I guess he's alive.
I think it stands for sure. Hey, a DC Entertainment.
Nice.
Decent entertainment.
So basically this is about the Frankenstein character that was in Grant Morrison's Seven Soldiers. And he was in Frankenstein and the Creature Commandos,
yeah,
which was a Flashpoint miniseries. And I don't know, they're kind of like
He's working for Shade, which is run by Father Time, who's actually a little girl in this.
Yeah, which is weird, but awesome.
Reincarnated or taking a new body or whatever.
Yeah. And basically, they just fight supernatural threats.
Yeah.
And Frankenstein's bride is missing or whatever, and they're trying to get her back.
Yeah, it's a very simple story, but there are a lot of little elements in it that are pretty crazy. Like, they fly around in, like, a tiny little 3-inch marble in the sky.
That they're all shrunk down into.
And they do lots of experiments. Ray Palmer, the Atom, is in this.
Yeah. Yep. He's the one that created their shrunken down world, headquarters or whatever.
Which is pretty interesting. And Frankenstein gets very angry a lot because, they're sort of committing what he considers to be atrocitous crimes against humanity.
Atrocitous.
Not atrocitous. Atrocious. Atrocious. I don't know. Yeah. Crimes against humanity. And I don't know. It's fun. It's good. Yeah.
You're just stuck on atrocitous.
Yeah. I love atrocitous. We'll get to atrocitous later.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it's a simple story, but it's a lot of fun.
It's awesome.
The art's very cool. Yeah. To the point where it even looked like it was maybe drawn by Jeff Lemire in the beginning.
A lot of the parts look like Jeff Lemire.
This is one of the books that made me kind of say, wow, they did get some unusual artists that kind of breaking out of the old DC mold to do something really unusual and really good.
Yeah, so if you're looking for something a little different and definitely fun out of this, that's kind of its own thing.
And what did he write last week?
Who, Jeff Lemire?
Yes.
Animal Man.
Wow, the book that sold out because we recommended it. So if you like that one, you should check this one out too.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome. All right, so moving from Frankenstein to some fungus. That's a good transition, right?
Some fungi.
So this is Fungus Number One by James Kolchaka. You guys know James Kolchaka?
Yeah.
thanks for the assist there, everybody.
Pinky and Stinky.
Yeah.
Did American Elf.
Dragon Puncher.
Yeah, there you go. That's more like what a Johnny Boo.
Johnny Boo, thank you.
Yeah. So yeah, James Kolchaka does
Monkey
lots of
versus robot.
He does lots of good comics. And
this is actually the first issue of kind of a series of kind of one shots with different artists in it, and it's being put out by I forget what the publishing company is, but it's Box Brown.
Yeah,
I talked to him at actually SBX, and he's like, "Oh, this is my comic," and I was like, "Oh, but this is yours?" And he's like, "Yeah." And we're putting this out, every month. And this one's all James Kolchaka, and it's great.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's basically these two fungi. Well, it's two different stories, but they're each about two fungi. But the first one is they're walking around, contemplating the existence of God and whether or not God hates fungus.
And looking for a party.
Yep. And then the second one is about two fungi who created Facebook.
Yep.
Based on the Vosselman twins or the...
Yeah, what are they called?
Vosselwinkles or something.
Yeah. What are they called in this? The Wasselmoss twins?
Yeah, the Wasselmoss twins. But it's, if you know James Kolchaka's stuff, you kind of get where this is going to go. Yeah. I don't know. It's fun. It's goofy. And yeah, it's awesome.
I'd kind of only recommend it if you already read some other Kolchaka stuff, though.
Really?
This is a pretty deep end jump for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very weird.
Yes. But you can read this.
Yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. That's Fungus Number One. I don't really know what to say about it. I loved it.
There you go.
It's got Kolchaka's weird sense of humor, which is always very funny. And if you haven't read any Kolchaka stuff and you want to check his stuff out, go to American Elf, his webpage, and he does daily comics that are always hilarious. So, that's Fungus Number One. Let's move on to Green Lantern Number One.
Green Lantern. No, it's not Green Lantern.
Is that song. The Green Lantern song? Yeah, so this is by the same team that's been working on Green Lantern forever. This is Jeff Johns and Doug Monkey. Yeah, anyway. So basically, at the end of the previous Green Lantern storyline, Sinestro becomes a new Green Lantern. And he, is on the cover of this book. But it's basically a book about Hal Jordan not being Green Lantern more than it's a book about Sinestro being Green Lantern.
Yeah.
I'd say it's both.
I'd say like two thirds of it is about Hal Jordan and a third of it is about Sinestro.
That sounds about right. But it kind of continues the story of what was going on in Green Lantern. Green Lantern and Batman are kind of the two things that were left alone a little bit by this new 52. It's a little bit incongruous with the rest of the stuff that's going on in the DC 52. Like it's hard to tell. Like I don't know. It's weird.
Feel like a lot of the DC 52 is it's slightly different points, like this happens a month before something else or a year later, and everything feels out of sync, like you said, incongruous.
And I'm pretty sure this will kind of sync up with Justice League, because I feel like by the end of the story he'll be Green Lantern again, and then in Justice League he'll be Green Lantern
but
again.
Justice League is like before this story,
but once Justice League goes to the present, which is after like 3 year issues or whatever, I think by that point he'll be like Green Lantern again. So
right. And it's, you know, if you've been reading Green Lantern, this is more of the same, but not in a bad way. It's well written. There's a really funny scene where Hal Jordan's not really used to not being Green Lantern. So he sees a woman being abused across the street, and he's like in high rise, and he like jumps through the window across the street and like beats up the guy, but ends up there just shooting a movie.
Yeah, it was
pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, it's good though. It's you know, if you like Green Lantern, it's Green Lantern.
It's funny, badass, and sweet.
There you go.
There you go.
It's badass, just the like trifecta. Deathstroke.
Yeah. It's
like,
super badass. So badass.
Yeah. All right. So, oh god, this next book. This is a book we picked up at SPX this year. This is called "The Gremlins Movie Incident" by Cara Bean.
Little mini comic.
It's so funny.
It's a little mini comic. It's about a bunch of kids going to see Gremlins, basically.
Autobiographical
comic about a bunch of kids going to see Gremlins when it released in like '86 or whenever it came out. And being, you know, having the bejesus scared out of them.
Being way too young for Gremlins. Yeah. Like most of us.
And it's really funny. It's a really endearing story. A lot of the way the kids act, I feel like, is very true. And like they're, you know, how kids are crazy and annoying.
Yeah. I mean, it's about her, like the writer going to see Gremlins.
Right.
Her, like brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And there's a crazy little thing that happens in it that you should read because it's really funny and surprising. Yeah. And, no, it's a really great little book. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that you go to SPX to find.
Right.
Anybody that's seen Gremlins and remembers being a kid should probably read this.
Yeah, it's very cool. Seeing these kids horrified as Gremlins are like put into blenders and microwaves.
Yeah, how awful that was.
Yeah, it's great. See, I don't remember it being awful. I remember loving it much. I wasn't scared of Gremlins. I just wanted to watch it over and over again.
So
we've got that at the Vienna store.
Yep.
And it's definitely worth coming and taking a look at it if you love Gremlins.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, if you're a child of the 80s.
That's well put.
Which so many of our customers are.
It's true.
Yeah, it's much better than the new Thundercats cartoon. Anyway, snap.
Jab.
All right, so moving on to Grifter number one. This is by Nate Edmondson, the guy that's been writing Who is Jake Ellis, which is a very good series. And the art is by Cafu, who's been doing the art for Thunder Agents by Nick Spencer, which is another very good series with very good art. And this seems to be the beginning of a very good series with very good art.
Funny how that goes.
There's not a lot of grifting in this. There's a little mention
there's
of
grifting.
There's a little bit there of grifting. There was
one grift. The guy's like, oh, I got grifted by Grifter. It's like, well, what did you think was going to happen?
That's his name.
Yeah. This takes place on a plane like every other book in the DC universe.
This week, especially.
I think a baby gets killed in it as well, which is...
Probably.
Yes, it happens in all the other DC books. No, but it's good. It's it seems very separate from the rest of the universe now, which they're doing with a lot of books, which I think is nice.
Right.
And, I don't know. I mean, tell people what it was about. Jared.
Okay.
Oh, pressure.
Go ahead, Jared. Shoot.
Kind of a thriller. I'd say much like Who is Jake Ellis. It's kind of got that outside element where it's just a single guy trying to do stuff and he's running around with this girl and like they are involved in a crazy scam and things go terribly wrong.
That's pretty much it.
Yep.
And it's got a little twist at the end, like a lot of these books.
Right.
So people will come and read the second issues. And I'm going to read the second issue.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was definitely really good. It's in my top 10 of the DC Universe books for sure.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so that's Grifter. Definitely worth checking out. Let's move on to Hondo City Law.
Oh,
this is by Robbie Morrison and John Wagner. and art's by Andy Clark and a little guy called Frank Quitely.
I heard him.
And Colin McNeil and Neil Googe.
Neil Googe.
I always love to talk about the Googe.
The Googe.
So Hondo City is basically, if this is set in the Judge Dredd universe. And Mega City is the main city in Judge Dredd, which is like London. And this is, or like, you know, an analog to London. And this is Hondo City, which is basically Tokyo.
Yeah.
And so it's like Judge Dredd, except everybody has really cool samurai looking helmets and
swords.
Lots of insane stuff happens. And it's got art by Frank Quitely.
And Andy Clark. Andy Clark's art's so great too.
Yeah, Andy Clark, I guess I mostly know him. He drew the first few issues of Rebels.
Yeah, and he did Aquaman for a while back in the day during the Sub Diego.
Sub Diego, when Aquaman was basically just Law and Order.
It was great.
In the ocean.
It was so good.
It was good. No, nobody that was good. So, I, you know, Frank Quitely, of course, he drew We Three. He drew JLA Earth 2. He drew All-Star Superman.
Basically everything that's awesome.
Everything that's awesome he did. And his art in this is amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah. I'd say this is the closest thing he's done to sort of like a Jeff Darrow kind of art. Like, it's super detailed and super complicated. But, I don't know. It's very cool.
Yeah, like seeing the fight scenes between those. It's just like, it's kind of like that Kirby, not at all in Kirby's style, but it gives like the dynamic, just things happening and people moving. And oh, it's so
yeah,
good.
It's very much like Judge Dredd by way of Mobius and Jeff Darrow or something. It's cool. It's a cool book.
Is there any mention of anybody being the law in this?
Well, in the first story, because the first story is about Judge Dredd going to Hondo City. And that's actually, in a lot of ways, the worst story in the book. But the Frank Quitely stuff, I mean, it's Frank Quitely.
Yeah.
Whatever. But... You probably have all the other Frank Quitely books, so just get this one, too.
Yeah.
It's cool. So what's next? Oh, cool. John Carter, Princess of Mars, number one. This is written by Roger Langridge with art by Philippe. I thought the art was by Eric Canetti.
Maybe no. It is.
Yeah, no. Yeah. The art's by Eric Canetti. But anyway, I think so. But here it says Philippe Andrade.
No, that's what it was.
Was it? Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think it was.
Anyway, the art's really good.
It is.
And Roger Langridge is... Roger Langridge did a signing at our Vienna store.
He's a very nice man.
On Friday. He's a very nice man from New Zealand.
But apparently he's also a great writer of John Carter.
Yeah, he is. Because this is... It's basically an adaptation of the book.
Yes.
But it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's got really good art. And John Carter jumps around a lot like he likes to do. Yeah, there's, I don't know, there's not a lot to say about
there's a lot of Thraks in this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Are Tharks or are they Tharks? Tharks.
Yeah.
Tharks.
It's got Dejah Thoris in it.
It does?
Yeah, it's cool. It seems to be pretty closely tied to the new movie coming out now that Disney owns Marvel. And it looks like the Tharks design is very similar to the design in the movies.
Yeah. But it's a pretty much straight up adaptation of the Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yeah, pretty much with a little bit more humor thrown in.
Right.
And it's great. I think it's better than the Dynamite books that have been coming out. But those have been pretty good, too. So
yeah, this has more sense of fun in it, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. So, it's a great book. I'd say support anything Roger Langridge does. He's a fantastic writer. His Muppets books are great. Fred the Clown is great. His new Snark series is fantastic.
And he's really nice.
He's super nice.
He's nice. He drew me the most amazing picture of Popeye.
It is amazing.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's very good. You should scan that, and we'll put it up on the webpage.
We'll do it. I'll scan it. This. I'll scan all my weird.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we should ask permission first.
Shh, don't tell nobody.
All right, so yeah, that's John Carter. It's good stuff. Definitely check it out. All right, let's move on to Jurassic Park, Dangerous Games, number one.
The funny thing is, I forgot about the title. I didn't actually read the subheading to this. I just like saw a Jurassic Park comic and opened it and started reading it. And then I was like, oh, this is a lot like The Most Dangerous Game. And I was like, oh, that's what it's called.
So this is written by Eric Baer and Greg Baer. Greg Baer is, I guess, a pretty famous sci-fi novelist.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Greg Baer wrote this.
He wrote that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And the art's by Jorge Jimenez. Nick says it's awesome. Well, Nick, tell all people what this Jurassic Park
is. Let me hit you with this. How does this sound? All right. So imagine the next Jurassic Park movie is about a mobster buying the island that all the dinosaurs are on. And basically just kind of ruling it and just being like a king. And he's got like a dinosaur on his shoulder that he feeds fish to and stuff. And then he finds out that one of the people in his organization is a mobster. And he basically says, I'm going to throw you out onto the island full of dinosaurs and you have 24 hours. And then we're going to start hunting you down.
So imagine that movie. Now imagine reading an adaptation of that movie that's drawn in a half-assed manga style. Because that's basically what this is.
You know what made this so much better for me? Is like, as soon as like he was on the island, he's like, oh, I gotta sleep in the dark because there's dinosaurs in the dark, so I gotta sleep. And then when he woke up, he started seeing dinosaurs, and I heard the Jurassic Park music in my head. It was like,
yeah, basically he gets there, he's got he gets there and he's got like 24 hours to like to find this guy.
He has to survive.
Yeah, he has to survive. And so he gets there and he goes to sleep. And then he wakes up and he's like, I need meat, and he starts killing dinosaurs.
That part was crazy.
It's really dumb. It's really dumb.
There's also a woman who has pet raptors, and it's amazing.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, this is like
idiotic pulp fun.
This is the best Jurassic Park comic I've ever read.
I agree.
But it stinks.
Yeah. I loved it.
I didn't think it stinks.
I thought it was really stinky.
It was garbage.
It was garbage. It looked like it was drawn by Gene Simmons' son.
Wow.
No, it didn't look like whatever that comic he copied.
I think it was just panels traced from Bleach. And with dinosaurs added in from the book.
Not a bad way to go.
That were from the movie Dinotopia.
Not from the books?
Not from the books, from the movie. Which, wait, was that the one that had John Goodman in it as one of the dinosaurs?
What? I keep thinking of Flintstones.
Basically, this is like, if you've seen the TV show Dinosaurs, it's like that.
But
mixed with Naruto.
Mixed with a Takashi Miike movie.
Yeah, mixed with Ichi the Killer.
See, these are high concepts that could get us jobs in Hollywood. These are brilliant.
Oh, so, Legion Lost number one is the next book we're going to talk about. Last week, the worst book of the week was certainly Green Arrow.
Nah, it was a toss-up.
Between Green Arrow and Hawk and Dove?
Yes.
Green Arrow was far worse.
Arrow was much worse. Oh, God. But Legion Lost is worse than Green Arrow.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Oh, so let me say this is written by Fabian Nishiza.
Who I actually don't mind too much. I mean, he wrote like some of the Thunderbolt stuff and I liked it.
No, he writes good stuff and his Red Robin stuff was pretty competent, I thought. Yeah. And the art in this is by Pete Woods, who I'm usually kind of a fan of.
It sucked in this. It was not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, it's not terrible. Like, there are parts of it that are still kind of great.
It looks a little rushed. Art-wise.
But I felt like the story in this was just completely incomprehensible. I got a few elements of it. Basically, there's like a plague that's being released, and at the same time, they have to fight like a bad guy.
There's just way too much going on in this.
There's a lot of stuff going on. I feel like I never read the original Legion Lost thing, but is this like a direct sequel to it?
No.
Oh, really? I feel like this whole comic takes place 5 minutes after a comic that never came out.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was my exact thing. I was like, I was worried. I was more thinking like, if I was an old fan of Legion Lost, I would like this. But if Nick just said it's not based on the old Legion,
it's not at all.
Then there's no chance.
Also, there's a weird thing where I'm kind of scared that this book will kind of reference the old DC universe, maybe. Because the thing is, like, they're like, they came from the future and now they're trapped in the past. And at some point, like, somebody's like, we have to go back to the future. And they're like, no, everything's going to be different now because something has happened and everything's changed. And I'm like, oh, no, don't start referencing already.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This was not a book for me. Of all the DC books that have come out so far, the only one last week that I'm not going to read the second issue of is Green Arrow. And I think this is the only one this week that I'm not going to read the second issue of.
No, it's not the only one.
Well, yeah. There's a book Nick is definitely not going to read the second issue of. But so that's Legion Lost. I don't know. Maybe if you're a Legion fan, you would like it. But I feel like I'm not a huge Legion of Superheroes fan. I've read some of the old shooter stuff from the 60s.
I like the Mark Waid stuff from
That stuff was really good. Yeah. I think that was Barry Kitson,
who's Atari Legion.
Customer at our Bethesda store from time to time. So what's up, Barry?
What's up, Barry?
But this was just not a very well executed book.
No. It's unfortunately really bad. It's like I was like, I really want to stop reading this, and I was like, I have to finish it, and then I was like, maybe it'll start making sense. Never makes sense. They're just like, we were going to do something and then we went in this time bubble and we ended up here and now we have to do something else. And it's never clear what they're doing.
People talk about what they're doing a lot in this book, which you would think would explain what they're doing. But I still didn't understand what was going on. Maybe I'm just a dummy, but
you're not.
Yeah,
it was terrible.
It was all three of us. So I feel like there must be something wrong here. Oh, my God. So moving on to an amazing thing. Let's just forget that Legion Lost ever happened. This is the Mad Folden collection hardcover.
Oh, yes, I ordered this.
It's not one hardcover. It is four hardcovers in a slipcase. This is a $150 book, I should say.
I ordered one for myself.
Yeah, this is every Mad Folden ever. Which have all been done by Al Jaffe. And it's a beautiful book. It's in a really nice slipcase. I would say it's akin, if you've ever seen the Calvin and Hobbes slipcase hardcover collection that came out. It's very similar to that in form. And it's cool. The way they lay it out is great.
Yeah, basically you open it and on the left side, they show you the original drawing. And then on the right side, they show you what it looks like when it's folded. Which is cool because I was a little afraid that I would have to start folding it, and I was like, I don't want to mess up this book by folding all the pages.
That's clever, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great way to present it, and it's cool. And there's an extra original fold in that was made especially for this book as well, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
$150 is a very steep price.
It's huge.
But it is a huge book. It is four oversized hardcovers.
It weighs like 8 pounds.
Yeah, it's gigantic. I mean. I don't know. It is exactly what it is, and it's well done. It's got a few great introductions. There's one by Pete Docter who works for Pixar, and it's awesome.
It's got like thousands of Foldens.
Yeah, maybe not quite thousands, but
at least like 800.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot. But yeah, it's awesome. So that was the Mad Folden collection, 1964 to 2010, and then. In 36 years, we'll talk about the next volume.
Let's do that math. Let me see.
I just did it. Oh, wait. No, it's 46 years. I didn't do it right.
46 years times 12.
Maybe even 47 years.
Good job, Nick. All right. So moving on to a big surprise for the week, I feel like. This is Mr. Terrific number one by Eric Wallace with art by Gianluca Gugliotta.
Close.
Sure.
I think it's good enough.
You're Italian. You should know this.
Yeah. It's... Spaghetti lasagna. Drew this. So Mr. Terrific number one. Jared, you've been a little quiet recently. Why don't you tell people what this damn thing's about?
All right. So basically, Mr. Terrific is one of the few remnants of the Justice Society that's shown up in the new universe so far. And he is proclaimed several times he's the third most intelligent person on the planet. He has control over robotics, or what is his power?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mechanical.
Well, he's
things.
Just a genius mechanical and stuff. All the stuff he's. The stuff he controls is stuff he created, so he can control it.
And then he starts running around. Like, the main plot is that there's a guy. God, I can't remember. A guy who runs around. There's someone help me here.
There's a guy that runs around.
There's a guy that runs around. There's T-balls.
There's a guy that walks.
No, that's Superman.
No, it's kind of a straight up action story to start with, and then
I remember there's a guy who walks around.
He wasn't running. Sorry, sorry about that misinformation we were giving you guys.
We'd like to turn into Mad a TV correction. But yeah, a guy who has somehow had his brain influenced to start just going out of control and killing people.
Yeah,
that's the bad guy.
Yeah, and there's really cool like little things in here, like all the technology he's invented over the years, and there's absolutely no reference to any of his past, like in the old books, like in JSA or whatever. But it's cool, and it's weird. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I thought this was going to be awful, but it's actually really good.
No, it was actually really good. It was definitely a big surprise this week. Again, like a lot of these books, I mean, I know I keep saying it, but there's a pretty fun little twist at the end that is going to make the second issue pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And no, it was good. The art was really good too. Yep. I will say. And Mr. Terrific is probably more interesting in this than he's ever been or ever will be again.
It's definitely terrific.
It's definitely it is.
It's Mr. Terrific.
It's great. Wait, that doesn't have anything.
It's terrific.
All right. So moving on to Optic Nerve number 12. This is by Adrian Tomine. This is the 12th issue of Optic Nerve in 20 years. But I think this is probably the best issue of Optic Nerve to your mind
in your opinion.
So basically why I liked this better than the other Optic Nerves is I've always felt like Adrian Tomine had a very stiff art style, but he told interesting stories that were very personal. But then as of late, his stories have gotten a little too stiff and depressing and just haven't really worked for me, especially particularly the last thing he did called Shortcomings. I thought was not very great. Then he did a book called Scenes from an Impending Marriage, which was about him getting married and sort of the whole process of that. And those were little short comics that were drawn in a much more cartoony style and were a lot more fun.
They were very like frank and sincere, like just you know, he's like, this is funny because, you know, this happened to me. And like, it felt like he was kind of rejuvenized by that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rejuvenated. Yeah. And then
rejuvenated.
And then in this, he kind of continues with that more cartoony style. So the art is a lot less stiff. There is, I'll say this is broken up in two different stories. Mostly I'm talking about the first story, which is called Horta Sculpture.
So weird.
Which is about basically a guy that invents or thinks he invents a thing called Horta Sculpture, which are sculptures that have plants growing out of them. And it's so funny. It affects his family in a lot of really funny ways. And he grows increasingly more bitter about it. And the art in this is sort of a mixture of Tomine's old style mixed with like definitely a big dash of Sammy Harkham, I would say.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sort of Elsie Seeger in this as well, the Popeye creator. And it's good. It's fun. It's like it's light.
It's almost all told in like four panel chunks. Like there's four panel comic strips with like a joke.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the way it's laid out is there will be 6 4 panel comics, which are and then one that are in black and white and one full page in color.
Like you a know? Sunday.
Yeah, like a Sunday in color. Yeah. And that's the first half of the book, and it's hilarious, and it's kind of sad, but it's really great at the same time.
And it's got a great like ending.
And yeah. Then the second half of this book is a little more similar to his older stuff. But still drawn in a looser style, I feel like, and it's about a girl who unfortunately for her looks exactly like an internet porn star,
right.
And it sort of affects her through her whole sort of teen years and early 20s, and that story is good, but yeah. To me the Horta Sculpture thing in here is really what what's sealed it. And then in the end of this book, there's a 2-page thing that's just about Adrian Tomine creating comics and how he makes floppies and like everybody wants him to make a graphic novel. And it's a really funny kind of look into, you know, just making comics.
Yeah. It's a really good commentary on the state of comics and how people perceive them, especially the creative side of things. And it was great.
Yeah. But the whole issue I thought was really cool. And yeah, I think it's the best issue of Optimus ever, easily for me.
Yeah. In a very long time anyway.
Yeah.
It was a good floppy.
It was a good floppy. Good job on the pamphlet, Tomine. So
it's good floppy.
Yeah. Moving on to Pigs number one. This is written by Nate Cosby with Ben McCool. Ben McCool wrote Groom Lake and Choker. And yes. Nate Cosby wrote stuff too. Yeah. I can't remember what, but he's done some books for Boom.
Okay.
And this has art by Breno Tamora. Somebody tell people what this book is about.
All right. So this one is apparently the idea that way back in the 60s, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, part of the problem was that the Cubans, you know, had allowed the Soviets to put in, you know, nuclear missiles on Cuba. But at the same time, they'd also smuggled in some spies who go into deep cover. And now, in the current time, the children of those spies are suddenly reactivated by somebody and told to go on their original mission to America. And this is the setup issue of who they are and how they got set up and what their plan is. And it's amazing.
And this has got the M. Night Shyamalan Award for best twist of the week.
I thought M. Night Shyamalan Award was for the worst twist.
Nah, it's the best twist. What a twist.
But no, it's yeah, but it's I don't know exactly what to say about it.
So good.
It's a cool thriller. A lot of it's about this family, but also I don't know, it's good.
When you get to the last page, you'll be like, oh sweet baby Jesus in golden diaper. I have to read the next issue.
Exactly. Oh, it's so yeah, the last page is insane. I was kind of going through the motions reading, and I was like, oh, this is good. I kind of like where this is going. And then once I got to the end, I was like, oh my God, I got to read the next issue of this
sweet,
for sure.
Merciful.
Yeah, and so that's Pigs number one. It's good stuff.
It's astounding.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Red Lanterns number one by Peter Milligan and Ed Baines.
Starring Atrocitus,
who... Let's talk about Atrocitus for a little bit, can we? So I always thought Atrocitus is...
Much like Sinestro.
I thought his birth name was Atrocitus.
Much like
Sinestro. And I was like, well, this guy is going to go down a terrible path, obviously. You're not born Atrocitus, yeah. And then you become like, you know, like a soft pretzel salesman.
Yeah. Like if I was Genocide.
It ends up he wasn't born as Atrocitus. No. His name was like Atros when he was born.
Atros.
Yeah, and then he changed it to Atrocitus. So so now I don't feel as bad for him.
Me neither.
It was a decision that he made.
He did.
He deserves everything he gets. So the Red Lanterns popped up a couple years ago in Green Lantern when all these different colored lanterns were coming out. And the Red Lanterns are the Rage Lanterns. And this is a comic about them.
First three pages involves a cat.
Yeah, I do like the Red Lantern cat.
The cat was amazing.
He definitely eviscerates some people in this, and I don't know. It's a weird thing to do a monthly comic about, though, I feel like.
Yeah, and also this was supposed to come out like a long time ago, like 5 or 6 months ago. And I'm assuming it just got pushed back just because of the...
Yeah, like Justice League International and Batwoman, this was definitely a book that was announced before they announced the New 52, which kind of helped us figure out that the New 52 was only planned about 3 months before it started.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's not that I didn't like this book. I just feel like it's a very strange book to have a monthly series about, and it's full... Like, Atrocitus is... There is a team of Red Lanterns, but Atrocitus is kind of the only one that really talks.
Yeah.
Right.
There's, like, this woman that babbles a lot that's one of the other Red Lanterns.
Rage. Anger, rage.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot to say about this.
It was weird.
I mean, if you're into the Green Lantern stuff, it's cool. I like Peter Milligan, the guy that writes it, and I think he'll probably do something interesting with it down the line, yeah. But...
It's almost entirely about Atrocitus and his past and...
Yeah, like how...
How he feels about rage.
Yeah, like how his, you know, his family was slaughtered and how he... By the Manhunters who were created by the Guardians and stuff like that. So, but that we already knew, too, if you've read the old stuff. So, there was a lot of setup in this that I think you might already know.
Much like Green Lantern, this is kind of like the follow-up to War of the Green Lanterns from, like, last year.
Yeah, so...
Or this year, I guess.
It's not a bad book. I don't think it's a bad book at all. It's weird.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It's definitely not a standout book from this relaunch.
Okay,
it
has to really do something different in issue two to get the old people to be excited.
I think that's definitely true. All right, so moving on to a book that was much more than okay, and that is Resurrection Man number one. This is by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, who have been writing all the cosmic stuff for Marvel. They write Warhammer novels, which Jared loves.
I do.
Jared's a Warhammer guy.
I am.
They've written a ton of good stuff. And this is drawn by Fernando D'Aguino. And this book is awesome.
Yep. It's resurrectacular.
It is, what do we call this? The most vertigo of the books?
I don't know. I think Animal Man was probably the most vertigo of the books. Of this week? Yeah, this is definitely the most vertigo-y book of the week.
Yeah. But apparently he, every time he dies, he comes back almost instantly with a new superpower.
Yeah. I mean, this was a series that was running back in the 90s.
Wow.
It's kind of like a cult following, and I know that people always talk about it, but it's cool because in this issue you can get kind of a little bit of a hint at to how his powers work, like why he has his powers, like because before in the old series I read part of it and it's basically just he's just a guy who dies and then when he comes back he has a new superpower, and this it's the same thing, but then like there's kind of hints that there's people from both like heaven and hell trying to track him down.
Basically, the people from heaven and hell want his soul. They feel like it's, you know, he's past due. He's died enough times that he should, you know, that he should not be coming back to life. So that plays into this story a lot. It takes place on a plane.
Yes.
Like so many of these books. Yep. No, it's well done. The art's really cool. I don't know this artist. I don't know if he's new, but the art reminded me a lot of the art in a book called Testament that came out a few years ago from Vertigo, which was a pretty interesting book that was pretty nutty. But I don't know. I definitely think Resurrection Man feels a lot like a Vertigo book, and it feels a lot like a good start to what should be a pretty interesting series. There's a lot of interesting stuff set up in this first issue.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it was probably my favorite DC book of the week.
Yeah, me too. And it's... The thing that makes it really cool is that you never know, you know, when he's going to die again and what his power is going to be when he comes back.
True.
Because in this one, it's like ridiculous. Like he dies in some way and comes back as just a guy who can turn into water.
Right.
Sweet. Yeah.
He's like Hydro.
Yeah.
So Resurrection Man number one was very cool. And if you're looking, if you liked Animal Man, you like Swamp Thing, I feel like this is the sort of next book like that.
Yeah.
And then there'll be Justice League Dark in a couple weeks. And then, it's cool that DC is doing a lot of Vertigo type books inside their regular universe because I think it gives this new universe a little more variety.
I agree.
I like that there's a little more comedy in this and everything, and then there's a little bit more of just kind of out there stuff, which is cool. There should be.
Yeah. It's comics, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so moving on to a book that surprised me this week. This is Suicide Squad number one. This is written by Adam Glass, who wrote some stuff for Superman, Batman, and I believe was a writer on the Supernatural television show.
Yep. Wow.
And it's got art by Marco Rudy, who was he was a football player, but he was like really small. And he was also in Lord of the Rings.
Actually, the this is the first sign of kind of some problems, because this book is actually drawn by three people.
This book is drawn by three people.
Yep.
Which for the first month,
for a first issue, I mean, come on, three artists.
I will say it's not hugely noticeable unless you actually look and see that it's drawn by.
The only thing that's noticeable is like the last like three pages.
Yeah,
or
that's
so.
Definitely true.
But they've switched off of him to a new guy for the next one, right? Like this was the. Getting rid of him.
I'm not sure, but that sounds good. Let's say that is happening.
Sure.
But so now I didn't think I was going to like this book. The first thing I saw from this book was the cover. And I'm a big fan of the character Harley Quinn. Yeah. And I love the old Batman animated series stuff. I love Mad Love. And I always thought Harley Quinn was a great, fun character. I love the Harley and Ivy stuff that came out. And but her costume in this.
Yeah, the redesign is terrible. She's still kind of the same character, like when she talks and
not as much even.
Yeah, but she doesn't have as much personality. No. And she just looks like a stripper, and it's like it's just like
a goth stripper.
Basically the costume redesign is in line with the Batman Arkham Asylum video game.
Yep.
Which is a good video game. It's a very good video game. But you know, something like that, I feel like, is a little more acceptable in a video game than, you know, to completely redesign a character for basically no reason in the book. That's all just, like, stuff, you know? It's not that important.
Right.
And this book was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, yeah.
I mean, the basic premise is pretty similar to the old Suicide Squad and the Secret Six book that's been coming out, in that it's a bunch of villains who have been caught and are in prison and are basically going on these suicide missions to have time taken off their sentences.
And there's a great cliffhanger at the end.
Does part of this book take place in a plane as well?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
They
get dropped out of a plane.
Yeah, this is a very plane heavy week in the DC universe. Yeah. But so the other characters in this are King Shark, who is a hammerhead now.
Yeah, for no reason.
And wait, who else was in this?
Deadshot, who's got a new redesign, which is not too great, but it's all right.
Yeah,
I just mean as a character, I liked how they did him in this one.
Yeah. So, it was you know, it's very similar to the old Suicide Squad stuff, but it's well done. I mean, I always thought that was a good premise for a book. You can kind of do a lot of things with that, and they seem to already be setting up some twists and turns. And I like this a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right, so here's the thing: we love comics. They're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
No.
Yeah. So Superboy number one came out this week.
Written by?
The Scott Lobdell is what Nick wrote here on my piece of paper. With art by R.B. Silva. I'm going to say I thought the art in this was pretty good. Yep. I know Nick was not a big fan of the art in this.
No, I did not like it.
I didn't hate this book.
Me neither.
I hated it so much. It's so bad.
I'm going to describe it because I know Nick is going to, if he describes it, he's just going to, you know, make it sound worse than it is. It's not great. Scott Lobdell is not a good writer.
It's not good. It's not even good.
But it's okay.
We're working with didn't hate it. So yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hate it is where I am on this. It's like a C minus, and I thought it was going to be an F minus or like a G. Is there a G? But
it's an L for Scott Lobdell.
So the basic setup of this is that Superboy is a he's a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor, although they don't say it's Lex Luthor in this, but it's pretty heavily implied.
They're like, he must have been cloned by some psychopath.
Yeah, or from some psychopath. And it's like, that was definitely a weird thing. It's like they don't know who he was cloned from. I thought that was very strange.
Didn't they create him?
Yeah, exactly. But and so he's kind of being created as a weapon for a purpose that's revealed later in the book, and they put him through this kind of virtual reality world. A lot of it is really stupid.
All of it is really stupid.
Well, there were a couple.
It's terrible.
It's not good, but it's not. It's not as terrible as every other. It's not as terrible as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I did. There's a twist at the end. We keep talking about all the twists at the end of these books, but that makes me. I'm going to read the second issue of this.
Nope.
I know you're not going to read it.
Nick is out.
But I will say there are definitely some negatives in this. One is there's a lot of stupid techno jibber jabber at the beginning of this.
I skimmed a lot of that.
That's just a ton of malarkey. It's
like
just,
he's in the embryonic fluid and he's going to come through the... it's just
he's like a trans-terrarian class B clone. It's like, who cares? You know, whatever. But I kind of like there was a... there's a character that's introduced in it that's kind of a scientist that has like a heart of gold or whatever. And I kind of like that character a little bit. I mean, most of all, I don't know. It's not great. I don't know. I would not really recommend this book to anybody. The only reason I'm even talking about it so much is because I didn't hate it as much as I thought.
Nothing happens in it at all.
That's what you keep saying. I disagree with that. I do
the VR stuff, the virtual reality stuff, where they're training them.
There is a funny part in that where basically Superboy just walks past like a woman that's burning to death in her house.
Yeah. I liked it even more when I didn't realize, when they didn't tell you at first it was a virtual reality. I'm like, this character's interesting.
Yeah. But
then you're like, oh, wait, no, he's not.
Yeah, no, he's not. I mean, I see the point you're making that when you say not a lot happens. I mean, there is a lot of incident in this book, but the character is sort of in the same place when it ends as he was when it started.
Yeah.
Which means that there's definitely not a lot of character development.
All right.
But the little thing that they reveal at the end makes me think that, I don't know, it's an interesting take on a relationship that Superboy has with other characters. But it's written by Scott Lobdell. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Moving on.
Throw in the garbage. It's garbage.
All right. So moving on to a book that unfortunately I didn't get to read this week. I love the first one. But this is Three Thieves Volume 2, Sign of the Black Rock. This is by Scott Chandler. Scott Chandler is the writer of the first Three Thieves book. He also wrote Two Generals and he wrote Northwest Passage. And he draws all those as well.
Yeah.
He's an amazing artist and he writes amazing kind of seafaring fiction stuff and adventure stuff. There you go. And this is another awesome adventure fantasy stuff thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read the first one, basically it's about like a girl whose brother gets kidnapped by like an evil queen, and she ends up teaming up with this guy who's what is he exactly, like a giant?
Yeah, a giant and a little goblin.
But he's like, usually he's part of like a race that has like a two-headed race of monsters, but he has one head. And then and a goblin, and those three basically end up in the first book. They steal a bunch of things from the queen's tower, like her treasures, but mostly just a book, and they're trying to find her brother. And this second book is about them kind of being on the run and being in this inn, where it ends up like a lot of the people chasing them are also in this inn, and there's like a, you know, a little like hide and seek kind of thing, and it's great. There's like a thing about the innkeeper and his wife that builds throughout the whole thing, and as a satisfying ending.
That everyone in the inn is somehow double crossing each other, or they're also on the run, or then like more of the queen's guards show up. So it's just like everyone's out for everyone. It's just like classic everyone running after everyone and all kinds of chases across the rooftops and hiding in things, and it's amazing.
Which sounds like a lot of what they did in the first book. Yep. They tell this great adventure story, but then they also kind of set up this universe and this kind of kingdom and stuff at the same time. I think these, I mean, I haven't read the second one yet, but I feel like these books are really overlooked kids' books right now.
I agree.
Like, a lot of people will look at Amulet, which is, of course, an amazing series, and kind of don't think there's a lot of other fun adventure stuff out there for kids at the moment. You know, like kids who've read Bone and maybe want to read something else after that. But Three Thieves, I mean, check it out. It's fun. Yeah. It's, I mean, your kids will love it, but you'll love it as well. And no, it's just good stuff.
It's super entertaining. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
Just good.
Yeah. It's awesome. And Scott Chandler is a fantastic artist.
He's really good.
Yeah. Very cartoony, but, you know, his art serves the story really well and it's good stuff. All right. Moving on to, alphabetical order served us well this week. The last book that we're going to talk about is Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 1. This is by Brian Bendis and Sarah Pacelli. This book is, of course, been very controversial because the new Spider-Man is black and Latino.
And this is also the best book of the week.
You think so?
I think so.
It might be.
Best, like, individual comic
of
the week?
I'm pretty sure it is. Individual comic, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the Mad Folding Collection is probably the best book of the week.
Yeah.
I think.
But individual comic-wise, this is...
I think that's
floppy wise.
I think that's fair. If you're just talking about floppies,
yeah.
I really did love the first half of Optic Nerve though.
Yeah,
I loved it. Yeah. But anyway, so Nick, why don't you tell people what's going on? You know, Peter Parker died, so start him off from there.
Well, there's not much to tell without giving away the entire plot of this issue, but it's like, you know, basically Spider-Man died and Peter Parker died, and Ultimate Fallout number 4, they reveal that there's, you know, somebody else's has spider-like powers and is dressing up like Spider-Man. And in this issue is all kind of like a setup thing. And I will say that it starts with Norman Osborn, and he's talking about the spiders and like he's like, I created Spider-Man and these spiders were here. And then he has a scientist and he's like, help me find the last of these spiders. And obviously one of the spiders gets away and Then we're introduced to Miles and his family, which are incredibly interesting, like all of them.
Yeah.
Like his parents are interesting. His like he has like a relationship with his dad's brother, who's like kind of like a black sheep of the family. And, you know, then he starts gets bit by a spider and then stuff starts happening.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with all like the family dynamic in this that they set up. But like there's a big chunk of the book is about, you know, the fact that this character Miles is what's his last name? I can never
remember. Morales.
Yeah, Miles Morales is he's trying to get in, or his parents are trying to get him into a charter school.
Oh, right.
And, you know, they very much want him to be an achiever because it seems like maybe his father has had a lot of, you know, strife in his family life.
Yeah, and they're kind of poor and they can't afford to, you know.
Right. And like you said, the brother seems to be sort of have some sort of lascivious past.
Yeah.
And I don't know. They do a really good job of setting this character up as an underdog and also at the same time imbuing him with a lot of personality. Like I think he seems to have a lot of personality right off the bat. He's really likable.
Yeah. He's like very different from Peter Parker too. He's kind of the same in the fact that he's like the underdog and he doesn't have money and he's got problems, but their problems are like completely different than Peter Parker's problems.
Yeah, they definitely didn't make him a clone of Peter Parker, which is good because nobody ever wants to see another clone of Peter Parker. But yeah, he's not like a science nerd and things like that. No. You know, he's just like a kid and he's like his life's changing a lot and you know, in regular ways. And yeah, then like, he gets spider powers.
Well, that's the thing, like even if he didn't have spider powers or any Spider-Man stuff, he's a good enough character with a good enough stuff that I'd be reading this comic just to see what happens next.
Yeah, I definitely think Bendis knocked it out of the park with this. You know, Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man lasted for a long time. It had a really satisfying ending, I feel like. And I had a lot of people coming in, they're like, oh, well, when's Peter Parker going to come back? And I'm like, I don't think you're going to see Peter Parker for a long time.
Never.
I think they're really going to establish this character.
I mean, if you want to see Peter Parker, just read like Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, and the art, Sarah Pacelli's great. She worked on Runaways for a little while and some other things. She has a really fluid, dynamic style that's very cool and will definitely serve the Spider-Man character in the long run. Hopefully she works on this book for a long time. And it's cool. One little thing that I always thought was very cool about this new Spider-Man is that he was inspired by Donald Glover.
Oh, yeah.
Is Childish Gambino and Troy from Community. He had lobbied for a long time to play Spider-Man in the new Spider-Man movie, and everybody thought he was crazy. But Bendis thought it was such a cool idea. He was like, you know what? I'm going to make the new Spider-Man like a skinny little black guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah, I think it could be the best book of the week, for sure. Definitely the best superhero book of the week.
Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's in a week full of a lot of books.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff, actually.
Yeah, definitely a lot of good stuff. So hopefully there's a lot of good stuff next week, too. There's definitely a lot more stuff coming out again.
More Scott Lobdell books.
Teen Titans next week.
Something. Maybe Red Hood.
Oh, is he writing three books? Oh,
yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, jeez. Jeez Louise. Yeah, so, yeah, we'll be back next week with our third week of all this DC New 52 coverage.
I can't wait.
I can't.
Well, you're going to have to.
I want to read all those books, God.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait for the new episode.
I'm tired of reading DC books.
All right, so that's it for this week. Wow, an hour and 18 minutes.
Sorry, folks.
Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah, Jeepers Creepers. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
See you later.